Karnataka is going to the polls. Election Commission has announced the date of May 10. And as I started reading up and also researching, talking to our political editor DK Singh, our correspondent in Karnataka, Sharan Powana, I figured that, you know, all of us stay obsessed with the politics of Hindi heartland, particularly caste politics, Brahmin, Thakur, Bhumihar, SC, scheduled caste, OBCs, etc., etc., etc. The politics of Karnataka, even caste politics, is a lot more complicated and cluttered and fascinating than that of any state, I dare say, in the Hindi heartland. Now, if you're from Karnataka, you might turn around and say, you're only saying it because you know, you knew nothing about Karnataka until now and you're saying it. But that is not true. When I come towards the last part of this episode of Cut the Clutter, you will know what I'm talking about. And when I start telling you the percentages and stuff like this, this is really complicated, cluttered, but fascinating. We will look at these coming elections under five heads for simplicity or for clarity. Number one, why is Karnataka so important in national politics? That will be easily done. Number two, why is Karnataka so vital for the BJP? Number three and four are two individuals, or one individual and one dynasty. That how come those who do not have any majority by themselves, who cannot win any majority by themselves, who can at best get a marginal vote of between 10% and 20%, how come those have such power in Karnataka that does not exist in any state in the country which the BJP has ruled or is ruling? And fifth, the very, very complex peculiarities of caste politics in Karnataka, which is what is in headlines lately. The chief minister of BJP, that is Bommai, recently took away or announced that he was taking away the 4% reservation given to the most backward classes in the Muslim community and giving it over to other reserved categories, and that led to trouble not just from any other Muslims, but it led to trouble, protests by Banjaras, most of whom happen to be Hindu. They are the ones who came and threw stones at Yediyurappa's house in Shivamoga. So how do you explain this situation? The chief minister of the BJP says that he's taking away reservations from the Muslims, but people who go and throw stones at Yediyurappa's house are not Muslims, but the Banjara community. And then also, why are they throwing stones at Yediyurappa's house and not at the chief minister's house? I'm not suggesting that they go and throw stones at the chief minister's house. I'm just making a point to you to underline the complexity. So first of all, why is Karnataka so important? Karnataka, as I had said earlier in an episode of Cut the Clutter, Karnataka is a middling state in terms of the rankings in the national politics. Middling means the topmost is Uttar Pradesh, sends 80 MPs to Lok Sabha. Number two is Maharashtra, 48. Then you come to Tamil Nadu, Bihar, etc., etc. And West Bengal. These are states in the early 40s ballpark. And then you come to states which send MPs to Lok Sabha in the strength of 25 or thereabouts. Karnataka sends 28. That's the reason we say Karnataka is a middling state. It is very important, one, because it's the only state in the south that the BJP controls. And BJP, until about 25 years ago, BJP did not exist in Karnataka. And how BJP came into existence and grew is a more complex story. We'll talk about it in detail at some other point. But I will tell you that the trigger for this was Rajiv Gandhi's humiliation of his chief minister Virendra Patil. In 1989 elections, Congress Party got 178 seats out of 224. That is the strength of the assembly in Karnataka. 178 out of 224. That is a landslide. And remember, in 1989, Congress Party was not on the ascendant. Its star, if anything, was in the decline nationally. It lost its majority nationally. But they won 178 out of 224. Who was their chief ministerial candidate? He was a man called Virendra Patil. Virendra Patil happened to be a Lingayat. In the course of time, there were riots in Karnataka, and as usually happens in the Congress Party, people went whispering to Rajiv Gandhi in Delhi that Virendra Patil was not proving true to his secular commitment or the party's secular commitment, never mind the fact that Virendra Patil had just suffered a paralytic attack and couldn't leave home, couldn't even get up from the bed. Rajiv Gandhi, on his way to where he was to unveil a statue, made a very short stopover in Bangalore, then went to some of the places where riots had taken place, met some Muslim families which had suffered, and then summarily on his way out, without as much as showing any courtesy to Virendra Patil, announced that he had fired his chief minister. He had changed his chief minister. That was seen as a big insult by the large Lingayat community of Karnataka, which is about 16-17% of Karnataka's electorate. They shifted lock, stock and barrel to the BJP, which meanwhile had built a Lingayat leadership. So that became the core of the BJP. So since then, the BJP has been there. Karnataka is very important. One, because it's the only state the BJP has. And second, look at the cities in India, the big metros. Delhi, the BJP doesn't control, right? BJP may win all the parliament seats from Delhi, but Delhi Assembly and Delhi Municipal Corporation are both with Aam Aadmi Party. Mumbai, you can today say that, all right, BJP's coalition with the new Shiv Sena rules Maharashtra, but Mumbai itself, until now, Mumbai Municipal Corporation has been with Shiv Sena, the old Shiv Sena or Thackeray Shiv Sena, and we don't know what will happen in the next election. Kolkata, again a metro, the state is with TMC. Hyderabad, yet another metro, the state is with KCR's party, right? So BJP has almost no full control over any other state which has a metro except Karnataka. And that's very important for two reasons. One, there is prestige and there is importance. And also, remember, for any political party in India, as in any country, politics needs to be funded. And all our cities are ATMs for political funding. So for a whole bunch of reasons, Karnataka is very important. For the opposition and the BJP, Karnataka is also important because just after Karnataka, the next state election will be the Telangana state election. That is the other state in the south where the BJP sees a chance. BJP did very well in the last parliament elections there, although they were far behind KCR's party. BJP has also done well lately there in by-elections. They got a bunch of seats also in the Hyderabad Municipal Corporation elections, leaving the Congress out. So BJP is becoming a kind of Congress of Telangana, and they think they have a chance. And there, if they retain Karnataka, that will give them tailwinds going into the Telangana campaign. On the other hand, if they lose Karnataka, because of anti-incumbency or any other factors, if they lose Karnataka, it will embolden the opposition. So that is the other thing. Next, BJP. For BJP, why is it so important? BJP, while they rule Karnataka, the fact is, and it's a peculiar fact, that in none of the elections so far, BJP has ruled Karnataka for 9 years so far, yet BJP has never had a majority in Karnataka. So 2008 elections, the first time the BJP got seats of in some substantive numbers, 110 seats, that is three short of a majority, 110 seats in 2008. They came to power, but they needed help from elsewhere, didn't get a majority. So 2008, 110 seats, three short of a majority. 2013, the BJP suffered very badly because their preeminent leader, Yediyurappa, walked away. He walked away because there were corruption charges against him. The Lokayukt then, Justice Santosh Hegde, he indicted him. Yediyurappa also went to jail for some time. He was made to leave his job as chief minister. He never forgave the party for that. He set up his own party, Karnataka Janata Paksh, which did not win many seats, which only won about 6 or 7 seats. It's in fact only 6 seats and collected about 10% of the vote, exactly 9.79% of the vote. But that crippled the BJP because the Lingayats by and large thought that in this case, just as Rajiv Gandhi had insulted all of the Lingayats by humiliating Virendra Patil, BJP had now insulted all of the Lingayats by humiliating Yediyurappa. So BJP's numbers from 110 collapsed to how many? From 110, they collapsed to 40. And this was the one election again where Congress party got a majority of 122, almost an exact majority. Yet again in 2018, when Congress party was facing anti-incumbency, BJP went to the polls. Prime Minister went there several times, addressed many, many, many meetings, even invoked the memory of generals, army chief from Karnataka, Karyappa, Thimaya, accused the Congress party's leaders, the Nehru dynasty, of not having given them adequate respect, of having even humiliating them, particularly General Thimaya. And yet the BJP got only 104 seats. So that's about 9 short of a majority. In that situation, Indian National Congress, which had 78, and JDS, Devagowda Family's party, which had 37, they got together and they formed a coalition government. Later, it was pulled down through one more episode of Operation Kamal, and BJP formed a government. For some time, that government ran under Yediyurappa, and then because BJP could not stand Yediyurappa, he was the only chief minister until then who could defy the high command and have his own way. He was so powerful that he even got the high command to break its own 75-year rule. BJP under Narendra Modi has laid down a rule that nobody above the age of 75 can hold office. But Yediyurappa became chief minister when he was 76. That the BJP didn't like, and for many other reasons, because he ran the government as he wanted to run the government, not necessarily following the high command's orders. He was removed, and Basav Raj Bommai, the son of former chief minister, late S.R. Bommai, was put in as chief minister. The important thing with him is he is also a Lingayat leader, because BJP depends on the Lingayat vote in Karnataka. If Lingayat vote does not come to them, they'll be down to 30-40 seats. That's very evident. In fact, in 2013, when they were down to 40 seats, BJP lost its deposit in 110 seats in Karnataka. 110 out of 224. So this puts a few things in perspective. And the reason BJP is so concerned about Karnataka right now is that, look, this is one seat, one state we hold in the south. If we win this, We have tailwinds going into Telangana, but if we lose it, then our entire experiment of replacing Yediyurappa, trying to run Karnataka through from the high command in Delhi would fail, and that will also show the high command in poor light. So that is the number two thing. Number three and four, this peculiar situation in Karnataka where others have such a good time, or others have so much power. See, for example, the Yediyurappa factor. Yediyurappa, for example, became chief minister, but he resigned as chief minister after Lokayukt Justice Santosh Hegde indicted him and, in fact, held him guilty. What was the charge? That he had received kickbacks from illegal mining. Some of those people involved in illegal mining, or allegedly involved in illegal mining, the famous or infamous Ballari brothers, later joined the BJP. One of them became a minister also. Then they left the BJP or was removed from the BJP. Within this current assembly, he's now formed a party of his own. And one cute thing he's done is he's chosen a football to be his election symbol for his new party. So Yediyurappa then left. In December 2012, an angry Yediyurappa set up his own party, Karnataka Janata Paksh, and we told you what happened in 2013 elections. He got about 10% of the vote and only 6 seats, but his humiliation, or the sense that he had been humiliated, drove Lingayats away from the BJP in their tens of millions, and BJP got wiped out. So if you want to see BJP's vote percentages, in 2008 elections, BJP got 33.86% of the vote, quite healthy. 2013, when the Lingayats got angry, BJP got 19.89% of the vote. Now, not all of that Lingayat vote went to Yediyurappa. So Lingayats then also apparently, it looks like, voted for whoever they wanted to vote for. They thought they had options. They were no longer committed to voting for BJP because their leader wasn't there. And when he came back, when Yediyurappa came back in 2018, when Narendra Modi came to power, among the earlier things he did was to reach out to Yediyurappa and persuade him to come back. He got Yediyurappa to come back to the BJP, to merge his party KJP with the BJP. And as a result, in 2018 elections, what happened to BJP's vote percentage? It went to 36.22%. A peculiar thing about 2018 elections, the last election, BJP got 36.22% votes. and 104 seats. I told you, in all the elections so far, BJP has failed to get a majority. 110 in 2008, very close to a majority, but not yet a majority. 2013, 40. And 2018, 104. Again, short of a majority. But they got 36.22% of the vote. Congress got more votes than the BJP. 38.04% of the votes. But Congress only won 78 seats. That means Congress's vote was more concentrated, maybe where they won by larger majorities, and other places they collected a lot of votes, it didn't count for very much. But BJP again was short of a majority, and you know what happened in 2018. Initially, BJP tried to rig up a government under Yediyurappa. It lasted 2 days. You can say Yediyurappa had his Vajpayee moment or a Fadnavis moment. It's more like the Fadnavis moment, because Vajpayee had his government the first time. He faced a vote of confidence, fair and square, lost it in 13 days and left. Devendra Fadnavis, on the other hand, did not even come to that stage. That is something that then governor of Maharashtra, conjured up in very early hours of the morning, was never meant to last. So look at the Congress vote percentages. I told you about BJP, 33.86 in 2008, 19.89 in 2013, when Yediyurappa goes away. Comes back to 36.22 when Yediyurappa is back in the party. Congress, on the other hand, 34.76 in 2008, let's say 35 in 2008, say 37, I'm rounding off now, 37 in 2013, 38 in 2018. So Congress vote share or vote bank has remained about constant at a little above 35. BJP has been close to 35 or thereabouts, but it fell to almost half, just a little over half, when Yediyurappa went away. So that is the Yediyurappa power. And even now, that is the reason you find senior leaders of the BJP, including Mr. Modi, are trying their best to keep Yediyurappa happy. Now look at the power of the other smaller party. Now that's a dynasty. If Yediyurappa is a personality, although he's building a dynasty of his own, but not quite the same way as the dynasty we are talking about. That is the HT Devegowda dynasty. In that dynasty, look at the vote percentages that dynasty has got. Their party, JDS, in the three elections we are talking about, the last three, 2008, 13 and 18, they've got respectively, say 19% of the vote, I'm rounding off, 19% of the vote, 19% in 2008, 20% in 2013, and again 18% in 2018. You would say that is a very consistent vote. That's because it's a caste-based party. It's a single caste-based party. They get most of their votes from Vokaliga community. Now, Vokaliga is about 13-14% in Karnataka. Lingayats are 16-17%. Lingayats now mostly vote for the BJP. Vokaligas have been voting for Devegowda's party. Vokaligas and some others, so it comes to about 20%. But with 20%, they can't get many seats. Again, in a house of 224, in 2008, they got 28 seats. In 2013, they got 40 seats. 2018, they got 37 seats. And yet, despite having so few seats and such a small percentage of the vote, Kumaraswamy, Devegowda's son, H.T. Kumaraswamy, has been chief minister twice in the state. Once in partnership with the BJP and once in partnership with the Congress. So you might say it's a case of tail wagging the dog. I prefer to say that this is an example of how leverage works in politics. These are leveraged buyouts. So usually I use that expression when BJP uses its own power and whatever it can do, the many episodes of Operation Kamal, to buy out governments. In this case, the smaller party can buy out a government, because without that party, nothing can work. In fact, in the print, there's an article, I'll share a link with you. If you see that article, that's about a small corporation poll in a place called Kalaburagi. Kalaburagi Municipal Corporation had 55 wards. Congress party won 27 seats. BJP won 23 seats. Four seats went to JDS. Just four seats went to JDS. And yet JDS used that leverage to try and get the mayorship of Kalaburagi. And how did that work? Congress had 27. The law is, or the rule is, that your other elected MPs and MLAs from the same municipal area, right? So from the same urban area, can also vote in the mayor's election. To Congress, 127 votes plus one Rajya Sabha member, 28, and one MLA, 29. So Congress came to 29. That is three short of the 32 required for winning the mayor's election, because that is the law. 32 for the mayor's election, because I presume it's 55, which is the strength of the municipal corporation, plus the numbers of MPs, Lok Sabha and Rajya Sabha members and MLAs from that urban area. So that is obviously 61. So you need 32 for a majority to win the mayor's position. BJP, on the other hand, won 23 seats, 23, plus it had two MLAs, 25, three MLCs, members of Legislative Council, 28, and one Lok Sabha member, so 29. So BJP and Congress, dead heat, 29-29. One independent didn't count. But JDS had four. So wherever the JDS would go, that side would get the mayor's position. So if my four are getting the 29 of you to get the mayor's position, then I get the mayorship. So that's exactly the same formula that JDS has followed to get the prime ministership of India once. In that case, Devegowda became prime minister simply because the constituents of that coalition could not agree on anybody else. So, okay, Devegowda looks like the most obscure of the lot, usko bana do, right? Similarly, H.D. Kumaraswamy, his son, has become chief minister in Karnataka twice. And this is, and how that leverage works, you can see in this mayoral election. That's the reason I'm pulling out this example. So this other peculiar thing in Karnataka, represented by, personified by these two factors, that is Yediyurappa, the person, and the Gowda family, the Gowda dynasty. Gowda dynasty, by the way, has eight members join in politics. So they again have a dead heat with the Gandhi family. They again have a dead heat with the Gandhi family. So this tells you that while usually we say haves have it, have-nots don't have it, in Karnataka politics, it looks like the have-nots actually have a pretty good time. So if you want to see the Devegowda family, see the infographic on your screens. That's the number of Devegowda family, members of Devegowda family who are in politics. There is eight of them. Now, what exactly is happening with caste in Karnataka? Now, Karnataka is a peculiar state because it's not a state which has a large, large Muslim or scheduled caste or OBC community, right? So there it's unlike the Hindi heartland states. It has 17% scheduled castes, 7% tribals, that's 24. Brahmins are just about 2%, no more. The peculiar thing is that the percentages that in Hindi heartland states are consumed by OBCs, those go to the Vokaligas and Lingayats in Karnataka. These are not OBCs, these are not scheduled castes, these are not classically upper caste also. They are middle castes in a way. Although both now seek some kind of OBC privileges and both are getting a little bit of reservations here and there. So Lingayats are 16% of the state and Vokaligas are about 13 to 14% of the state. Also traditionally, particularly after the decline of the Congress, 1994 onwards in the state, the two communities do not vote together. So if Lingayats go one way, Vokaligas go somewhere else. So Lingayats have been going with the BJP. Vokaligas, on the other hand, are not going to the Congress party. They are going to Devegowda's party, which became a single caste-based party. And whenever Devegowda is able to attract some others, particularly some Muslims, then Devegowda comes to about 20% of the vote. But lately, his vote share is declining. And one way of understanding this is to look at how reservations are broken up in Karnataka. I don't believe any other state in the country does it. So Karnataka reservations, if you see the formula, it looks like some kind of an algebraic equation. So category 1, 4%. This is the existing situation before Bommai announced these changes. Category 1, 4% for OBCs, that is 95 main OBC caste groups and many subcastes, only 4% of the reservation. 15%, that is called group 2A, 15% goes to another group of 102 caste groups, again among OBCs. This also includes the group of Kurubas. Kurubas are shepherds, which is also the caste of Siddaramaiah, the former chief minister from the Congress party and now one of the preeminent candidates from the Congress party, along with DK Shivkumar, who's actually Vokalega. Then category 2B, which is 4%, where originally the Muslim most backward castes featured, and this is what he wants to take away now and distribute to others. Then category 3A, which again is 4%. This is all subcastes of Vokaligas and all subcastes of Vokaligas, plus Reddys, Naidus, that's only 4%. So everything is divided in these penny pockets like this. Then a category 3B, which is 5% share, which goes to Lingayats and all subcastes of Lingayats, also some Christians, some Marathas, and some Jains. Now what Bommai has done is, he's increasing the scheduled caste share from 15 to 17%, but even within that, there is clutter. So what he's done is, scheduled castes also is divided up. So scheduled castes, 6% go to what is called as scheduled caste left. Scheduled caste left, let me not go into minutiae, but it's a bit like those who are even more backward, those at the lowest socioeconomic level of the scheduled castes. They get 6%, and then scheduled caste right. Scheduled caste right. This is not left wing or right wing. This is just a way of, when you want to create categories, you do funny things. Scheduled caste right, which are not seen to be as backward or poor as scheduled caste left, they get 5.5%. And if you think that this is not complex enough, another 4.5% goes to a scheduled caste category, which is called touchables. Now, who are the touchables? Touchables, or what is called as touchables, I have to be careful using that expression, that includes the Banjaras and Bhovi communities. So those communities now think, those might be the more advanced communities among the scheduled castes, so they were getting a larger share of that 15% reservation earlier. Now they're saying the overall reservation has gone up, but we've been limited only to this 4.5%. And that's why they are going out in protest. And why are they throwing stones at Yediyurappa's house? Because they think that all of this jiggery pokery has been done to create more reservations for the Lingayats, and they don't see Bommai as the preeminent leader of the Lingayats. They see Yediyurappa as being the leader of the Lingayats in the BJP. Now, if you can figure out the caste equations in Karnataka, you are a political pundit. I've tried doing it, but you know, my math isn't so bad. But having taken a close look at Karnataka now, I can tell you that this caste politics is more cluttered, more complicated, more complex, and more fascinating than that of any Hindi heartland state.